from Simon & Schuster Audio. Star Trek, The Next Generation. Ship of the Line. By Diane Carey. Read by Kevin Conway. The year, 2278. Bridge of the Klingon ship, Susoy Tuj.
Space boiled out before the supercharged Klingon warship, flickering on the giant forward viewscreen. The stars in the distance were the yellow and pink stars of civilization, orbited by planets bubbling with progress. From this point on, all the space before them would be Federation territory. Kozara, the Klingon commander, turned his craggy face to his bridge crew. "Today, my excellent warriors, our success will be etched on the gravestones of 50,000 Federation dead. Today, my excellent warriors, we will fall upon nothing less than a fully populated and operational starbase." Kozara gestured at the stars streaming past and spoke to his first mate. "Galon, look and appreciate what should have been ours. 1,000 luminaries displayed for the naked eye. Tails and sweeps and trunks, nebulae and storms, sparkling anomalies and ore-rich planetary clusters. They have everything. And look where we must live."
Galon peered at the distant suns and tried to see what Kozara saw. But in truth, the space before them looked like any other space he had ever seen in his career.
"Sir, we live where we have always lived. The Federation took nothing from the Klingons. We live where we evolved, sir, I thought."
"Yes, Galon, but the Federation plots to keep us there. Never forget. Now, order the crew to begin scans. See if our plan is working, if we can move forward."
Galon signaled the sensor officer and the two crewmen at the warship's complex helm. Kozara gazed at the open slate of Federation space. Apparently upon it, he saw etched his future. He smiled.
"My new son will have a famous father. He will be Zaidan, son of Kozara, destroyer of an entire starbase, and all will bow before him. Starbase 12 is one of the Federation's longest established starbases. For months, we have introduced operatives into the workings of the starbase. These spies have now fulfilled their purpose and have evacuated the station. Because of that work, Starbase 12 is experiencing a power shutdown. They have no weapons. We have allowed it to leak out that there will be a border dispute in the Federation's Benicia sector. Presently, all Federation Starfleet vessels in the sector are on their way to the Benicia border of the Neutral Zone. Our fleet is there, yes, but with no plans to cross the Neutral Zone. Their purpose only is to make sure the Starfleet commanders think there will be trouble and stay there long enough for us to cut across the Typhon expanse and decimate a great structure. Even the Enterprise will be drawn away, and the night sky over Starbase 12 will be ours to light."
Kozara was not old, yet he was deeply experienced. And still, over his years of service, glory had escaped him. He greatly needed a victory, and a victory such as this. Monumental. An entire starbase. The names of Kozara, Galon, and every member of his crew would be elevated in the Imperial hierarchy. Kozara suddenly came to his feet.
"We have 50,000 to kill, a starbase to shatter, and my son's legacy to ignite. Helm, plot a course across the Federation Neutral Zone. Enter the Typhon Expanse."
The year 2278. Freeze Posnikov Sector. Klingon Neutral Zone Border. Bridge of the USS Bozeman.
Captain Morgan Bateson raised his shot glass to First Officer Gabriel Bush.
"Gabe,
An old-fashioned rum tart, a change of watch can't be beat. Adding cinnamon and what's that other thing?
Vanilla. Got it from my grandmother, sir. She liked her rum after a voyage.
My respects to your grandmother for her recipe. Best thing since synthesized mamba venom.
Morgan Bateson's musketeer's beard and high forehead framed a pair of airbrushed gray eyes that were always working. Now those eyes glinted with good humor. Gabriel Bush was less dashing, less flamboyant, but no less capable. The descendant of a long line of seafarers and space voyagers, he grinned at his captain, who grinned in return.
Gabe, you keep some of this stuff aside for Captain Spock and the two new men. Better initiate our new lieutenant's right with a slug of rum.
I have theirs here on the upper deck, sir.
Bush shuddered down a lingering dread with a tot of rum. That dread was left over from the recent collision and fight with smugglers. The conflict had left him with a broken ankle and the ship with several crewmen dead, including the science officer and a second lieutenant. The Enterprise would soon be transferring two new bridge specialists to replace the lost officers. The Bozeman's bridge still smelled of burned circuits and raw insulation. 2 weeks of round-the-clock work had cobbled the cap bulkhead back together. Most conveniences had gone wanting for repair as the more critical systems were pasted back to some echo of working order. The interior of the border cruiser looked like a junk sail. Her outer hull was scorched and even missing plates. She was operational, but only generally. The communications technician's voice interrupted Gabe's thoughts.
Captain, the Enterprise is coming up on our port side.
The ship's half-patched bridge systems found their way to the forward screen and flickered up a portside visual of a stunning silvery starship. Captain Bateson grinned.
What a sight. Look at her. Everybody, turn and have a look at the Enterprise. Stand up and take a look at a ship of the line.
Yes, there she was. Refitted and strong as an ox, the USS Enterprise hovered off their port quarter. The original of her kind, this massive starship had recently returned from her second five-year mission under the command of James T. Kirk, the shipmaster who had piloted her to fame. Bateson gave a quick nod to Wiz Dayton at communications.
Hail them, will you?
Aye, sir.
The image of the starship shifted to a view of Admiral Kirk on the handsome bridge of the Enterprise. Bateson leaned forward.
Morgan Bateson here. Welcome to the Typhon Expanse, Captain Kirk. Aren't we privileged today?
Good afternoon, Captain Bateson. I feel a little privileged myself. I haven't seen a genuine border cutter in a good 6 or 7 years. That's a classic rig you've got there, Captain.
James Kirk stood up and strode toward the viewer.
We've taken the Enterprise out of the Academy training program temporarily. Headquarters got word of a Klingon fleet mustering a few light years from here, and we don't know why they're doing it.
Yes, I know. I wanted to head over there, of course, but we're still under repairs. I'm glad you'll be there, Admiral, given your experience with Klingons.
Doesn't match yours, Captain. Records show you've had more hand-to-hand experience with Klingons in the last 6 years than any other single commander in Starfleet. They should be leaving me here as a sector guard and sending you to the disputed area.
The whole crew beamed with pride.
You'd have to lend me that starship, too, Captain Kirk. The Klingon fleet wouldn't be intimidated by a border cutter.
So you say, but I know the Bozeman's record. That's a tough ship. Don't give her up.
No, to be sure. Say, would you like to come on board for a visit, Captain Kirk?
Can't afford the time. We're already late. Spock should be beaming over with your new officers right now. I'll take you up on the visit when we're done dealing with the Klingons. Kirk out.
As the screen flicked back to an outside view of the starship, Bush turned to Bateson.
Do you think Captain Kirk expects trouble?
Wouldn't bet either way. He's been on the Starfleet Academy faculty for several months. Could just be itchy for open space. We'll probably never know.
Out from the lift strode Captain Spock, supremely Vulcan and elegant, followed by two spiffy young lieutenants. Spock strode immediately to the center of the bridge and extended a hand to Bateson.
Captain, good morning.
Welcome aboard, Captain Spock. We're especially honored to have you here, gentlemen. My first mate, Gabriel Bush.
The famous Vulcan nodded to Bush. The honor is mine. The Bozeman has earned a strong reputation keeping the integrity of the Vrees-Posnikov sector. My condolences, gentlemen, on the loss of your science officer and your tactical lieutenant. I'm privileged to introduce your new second officer, Lieutenant Michael Dennis, and science specialist John Wolfe. Bateson stuck out a hand.
Hello, boys.
Gabriel Bush turned away and gathered brass shot glasses from the upper deck where he tucked them behind a strut of the bridge rail. He began pouring and handing out rum tots. Spock turned to Bateson.
Captain, I don't mean to be impolite, but the Enterprise is overdue in Benicia sector. Of course. What's the latest word on that?
Several Klingon heavy cruisers have been seen massing just beyond the neutral zone, along with at least 24 birds of prey. They have yet to make their intentions known or to communicate in any way. Bateson took a sip of rum so the others would feel free to do the same, then shook his head.
If they'd concentrate as much on improving their own territory as they do on taking ours, we'd have two strong neighboring civilizations. They can't seem to get that through their knobby skulls.
Spock lifted a brow.
Not lately. Farewell, gentlemen.
Spock slugged his rum tot like a proper tar, nodded approval, and handed the empty glass back to Bush. Then he offered the new officers an encouraging nod and left the bridge without fanfare. The taller of the two lieutenants, Mike Dennis, turned to Bateson.
Don't like Klingon, sir?
Don't know. Never met one in person. Only in battle.
Lieutenant John Wolfe licked flecks of rum from his narrow mustache.
How are they in battle, sir? Predictable. And when they try to be unpredictable, they're even more predictable. Now, boys, before you square away your gear, let me give you a short course in border patrolling. Have you heard anything about this service?
Mike Dennis glanced at John Wolfe. Neither wanted to speak, but as senior of the two, Dennis was pressed into service.
I've heard they call you Bulldog Bateson, sir.
Bateson suppressed a grin. At least Dennis had the nerve to admit what he'd heard.
You two know each other?
Wolfe shook his head.
No, sir. Just met.
Both Wolfe and Dennis were taking in their surroundings, glancing around the tight bridge and its two cramped decks. Now Bateson did smile.
Not exactly a starship, is it? Tell him, Gabe.
This is a Soyuz-class border cutter authorized by the Starfleet Border Service. We are direct descendants of the United States Coast Guard, tied to a long tradition of coastal security, and we're proud of it. The duties of a border cutter are smuggling patrol, towing, traffic control, buoy and lightship maintenance, import-export regulation, tariff and trade law enforcement, and aid and rescue. We're not a power pack, we're not a showboat, and we're never going to be in a history book. But we've got one thing that makes us equal to the Enterprise herself. You're wearing it.
Both Wolfe and Dennis looked down at their uniforms as if seeing them for the first time. Captain Bateson spoke up.
Ships are like people, boys. They have jobs, specific jobs. This is a border cutter. That's all it's meant to be. We're a working ship, not a glory factory. If you wanted something else, get over it.
All right, you men. Retire to Deck 4, Cabins 4C and F, and square away your gear. Report back to the bridge in 15 minutes. We'll give you a crash course in barter ship bridge design.
The two lieutenants headed for the lift, just as Wiz Dayton spoke from the communications board.
Excuse me, Morgan. I was monitoring the Enterprise's subspace emissions, but just now, all my comm systems went silent. No malfunction, sir.
Captain Bateson stepped to the rail.
What could blank out your systems? Did the starship backfire?
At the mention of the Enterprise, Mike Dennis and John Wolfe paused inside the just-arrived lift. Wiz Dayton shook his head.
Starship's long gone already. Warped out 3 minutes ago. I'm almost completely shut down here. I don't like the feel of it.
The captain turned to the forward screen.
Let's have a wide scan. You, Mr. Wolfe, you come over here and be a science officer.
John Wolfe hurried back onto the bridge. Mike Dennis also stepped out of the turbolift. Gabe Bush wondered what was happening. What could do this to the communications but not disturb any other system on board? Comet, maybe. He went comet hunting for 6 or 8 seconds, but found none. Then Wiz leaped back in his chair, pointing at one of his subscanners.
Holy Jerusalem! We got a mission signature! 64.9 in Richmond!
Bateson faced the main screen as it plumed bright with a new picture. The sensors had focused. They'd found it. Five times the size of the Bozeman, the Klingon warship pulled out from behind a drifting cloud of space dust. The bulbous forward hull was linked to a pair of back-swept wings by a long, thin, funnel-like neck. The bridge bulb stuck out in front as if to threaten whatever it pointed toward. Mission accomplished. Like most Klingon ships, its hull plates would drizzle green, like icebergs reflecting the cold ocean. Gabe had seen it himself off Newfoundland. He murmured to himself.
The color of envy.
Bateson's voice startled Bush out of his thoughts.
Confirm shields up, hailing frequency.
Sir, it's not working.
Do it anyway. We might be able to break through on short range. Send every signal you know how to send. Mr. Dennis, hoist the yellowjack.
Klingons or not, they'd understand the universal sign of flashing yellow and red hull strobes. Since the first flashing lights on police cruisers, keepers of the law had carried submission lights. Gabe Bush turned to the science station.
Mr. Wolf, give us a profile of that big hammerhead, will you?
Klingon ship is standard full-bore design, except I'm reading 32% more raw tonnage and roughly 50% fewer crew on board than usual. She's fully armed, and I'm reading some strange configurations in the cargo bay. I'd say they were jettison salvos.
Bush got a shiver as his internal barometer dropped. Jettison incendiaries. So brutal were those weapons, so entirely savage, that they tended to spark revenge and rage even brighter than the thing they were set upon to burn. The captain tilted his head.
Helm! Block their flight path!
Before them, the thick-hulled Klingon ship seemed to drift downward toward the middle of the screen, but in fact, the Bozeman was moving up.
Sir, I've got the ID code off their hull. Ship's name is Susoy Touge.
Mighty damn, that old blood blister. He's always dogging the neutral zone without really coming over the line. Get out the handcuffs, boys. It's the universal constant, Kozara.
Bush shook his head.
In that? Kozara flies a bird of prey. How can you be sure?
Because Susoy Touge is his mother's name. Interesting. She must have died. I get it now. The gathering of their fleet way over there is a red herring. Starfleet's been set up. The Klingons are creating a distraction, giving Kozara his chance to slip by. Don't you get it?
Bush tried to think. This sector had no particular prizes, just outposts and storage links. Bateson nodded at the Klingon ship filling their viewscreen.
They're here to obliterate Starbase 12.
The chilling words drove in a moment of silence. If true, this meant the Bozeman stood alone between jettison incendiaries and 50,000 innocent people on a starbase whose power was flickering. Starbase 12 couldn't defend itself against anything like that ship. Morgan Bateson kept his eyes on the Klingon ship, but moved slowly to Bush's side.
Gabe, I'm very sorry. I'm gonna miss your wedding.
What? Why would you?
The captain raised a hand and dropped it on Bush's shoulder.
You're gonna miss it, too. This just became a suicide mission.
Aboard the Susoy Touge, Kozara slammed a fist against his comm chair.
Bulldog Bateson.
Kozara had expected a clear path. The Klingon main fleet had notified them that all known Starfleet ships were accounted for.
Mistakes, always a mistake, stands between me and glory.
Pacing like an animal, Kozara thrashed back and forth before his command center.
We blank his communications, but only if we stay here. If we go on, he sends a message, and we are compromised.
Galon glanced around at the bridge crew and saw roaring disappointment in their faces. The mission of the decade, and one border patroller had stumbled into their way. If Kozara never saw glory, they never would either. Kozara glared at the border patrol ship.
He must be damaged. Otherwise, why would he stay here when his fleet goes somewhere else?
Kozara stalked over to his communications officer.
Keep the communications blanket on, but give me short-range subspace.
Frequency open, sir.
Morgan Bateson, the dog. We stand again before each other. Kozara the butterfly.
Yes, we do. Sorry about your mother.
It was her time to die.
So, Kozara, what are you doing here, if you don't mind my asking?
We have catastrophic failure in our environmental control, and an explosion in our lower deck flushed much of our plasma. We need assistance from a full Starbrace facility and request your merciful cooperation.
What a bag of bilge. You don't really think I'm going to let you get anywhere near Starbase 12 with that bulldozer, do you?
We have no unconventional weapons on board, only the usual disruptors, and I shall shut those down.
Come on, Butterfly. Enough shilly-shallying. Unless you turn around right now and head back through the neutral zone, I'll have to hold you, your ship, and crew in preventive custody. If you turn around, I'll log the incident as a navigational error. That's the deal.
No deal.
The comm went silent, and John Wolfe came to life.
Sir, I'm reading a firing solution.
Evasive maneuvers, right now.
The deck dropped out from under them. Engines surged. Bush slammed into the bridge rail, then caught himself and cranked around to see smoke boiling down from the port side upper monitor trunks. The ship's engineer reported.
Taking disruptor fire. Glancing hit shield 4. System stressed, but holding.
At Bush's left, Bateson was gripping the command chair with both hands as the ship tilted up on a nacelle to veer around a planet.
All right, boys. It's time to dodge, spin, parry, and thrust. Brace yourselves and make for the inside of the solar system. A good spanking pace.
The captain straightened as the ship's course rounded its curve and the compensators worked better.
John, quick. Let's see a schematic of this solar system.
Wolf complied without a word. Above his science station, three monitors flickered to life to show multidimensional representations of the lovely large solar system and its 20 planets. Bateson could see seven planets were clustered on the same side of the sun, within a few degrees of each other on the orbital plane.
That can work for us. As long as we keep Kozara from leaving the pie wedge right down the middle of those bodies, he'll be planet-locked. He won't be able to maneuver. Lead him right down the middle there, then veer on the Z-minus under that blue planet on the left.
Bateson managed to hold position and keep his eyes on all the monitors.
Keep the pot boiling, boys. They're coming after us.
Environmental control was breaking down with the strain of trying to outpace such a powerful pursuer. The cutter dodged under an asteroid belt and angled around a small dust ball with a rocky core. The Klingon ship fell far behind. An instant's victory. But there was no getting away without warp speed. Bateson called to his crew.
We're getting gnawed. I'll take suggestions, boys.
Captain, sir. The Enterprise...
Dennis called over the noise.
We could go around the largest planet and then maybe change course to stay there long enough to use the planet as a block. We need 19 seconds to broadcast a subspace message.
Too long. Keep the suggestions coming.
The planets raced past. At that speed, chances of being caught in the gravity of one of those bodies was very real. Disruptor fire streaked past them every few seconds, but the enemy couldn't get a straight shot. But even the glancing blows were rattling the Bozeman shields. The plunges, dashes, and climbs of this pointless course barely gave the gravitrons a chance to adjust, and Bush felt his stomach being pulled in six directions. He spoke up.
Captain, what if we send a hard shell?
John Wolfe shook his head.
It'll never get out far enough or fast enough. A calm hard shell's only sublight speed.
It may not help us, but it might help Starbase 12.
Bush was cut off as the ship slammed downward a good 2 feet. Caustic smoke belched from several positions at several levels all around the bridge. Dennis shook a burned hand and winced through the pain.
Is there some way we can launch a hard shell without having them see it?
The captain paused as the cutter staggered under another assault.
Gabe, can we rig a wide-range hard shell with 30-minute broadcast delay?
Can do, Captain.
Okay, Gabe. First, take precautions.
Bush clawed his way to a starboard side comm linked to the lower decks.
Attention all hands. Prepare for abandoned ship. Now, boys, that's not a command to abandon ship, just to prepare for it. Get the life pods warmed up and running. Bridge out.
Bateson slid out of his chair and prowled the helm.
I want to launch a hard shell probe into a sensor blind of some kind. A recorder marker at its highest sublight, but with a delayed broadcast timer of, say, half an hour. Once it's a half hour away, it'll send a distress beacon. We'll have to send it without Kozara's knowing, or he'll chase it down and kill it. It has to be silent for 30 minutes. That means we have to stay alive that long and distract him from scanning the area.
And once it's gone, even if we're destroyed, Starfleet will be warned and be able to protect Starbase 12.
I like the way you think, Gabe. Pack it with subspace broadcast on a delay. I want it to stay silent for half an hour, then scream its little ass off. 30 minutes, that's all I want, boys. If we live 30 minutes, I'll die happy.
And I'll die unmarried.
Gabriel Bush crossed his fingers, toes, and most of his chest hair as he watched the tiny dot of the comm probe gloss off into space.
Hang on, Ruby. We'll have that wedding yet. Hard shell launched. God help us, he doesn't see it go.
The sensor blind was small, simply a funnel-shaped piece of space starting small and widening into the far reaches. Into that little wedge, they launched their hard shell comm probe. Now the navigator leaned into his controls and the cutter veered off, hoping the feint in another direction would distract the Klingon. Dennis announced,
"He's gaining, sir."
Another spasm pierced the shields and came down through the innards of the ship. The crew was hit with waves of energy looking for a place to dissipate. Bateson shouted,
"Return fire, Gabe!"
The phaser scored a hit on the Klingon. Not a destructive hit, but enough to gain a critical second or two. The cutter jolted suddenly, and the captain and Bush both stumbled.
"Guidance is slipping, sir."
Straightening against the protests of his aching back and legs, Bush looked at the captain.
"End of the chase. He'll chew us to scrap.
Helm, look for a hiding place. We can't keep this up. What's around?"
"Sir, all these planets, three asteroid belts, all too thin. And over there is some kind of cloud."
"Cloud? Let's see it."
On the screen, through waves of acrid smoke, they could see a hazy globular mass that didn't look like anything but heat distortion. Bateson frowned.
"Is it energy? Is that a nebula?"
"No, sir, I don't think so. Some kind of energy. I'm getting some funny readings."
"Let's go in. Time for some navigating. Alter course, 1140, full impulse."
John Wolfe tapped at his sparking console.
"Entering the cloud, it's some kind of localized distortion."
The cloud was hardly that at all. Only the enhancement on the helm screen showed that they were heading toward more than a mirage. But if only it held some kind of energy that might choke the Klingons' weapons for a few more minutes, long enough for the hard shell comm to get far enough away. As for the Bozeman, suicide mission. Bateson had called it right. Bush thought of Ruby's funny face and chipmunk cheeks. How teasing she'd look in the bridal veil. The navigator gulped.
"Captain, I'm losing thrust. Speed's reducing. Main systems are losing power."
Bateson swung around to the port monitors to watch the approach of Kozara's warship. But the monitors were empty. Only stars. Mike Dennis bent forward over something on his panel.
Captain? The Klingon's gone.
No, he's not. Find him.
All faces bent to their boards. Wolf looked up from the science monitors.
No readings at all, sir. No residue. He didn't explode. No warp trail either. He didn't leave.
Dennis called out.
Captain, I've got some kind of malfunction here. The planets are reading slightly off position. This distortion we're in, I think it's temporal.
Time distortion?
Well, that's what I'm reading. Wait, I got him. Coming up on us fast from high forward. But the readings aren't the same. Collision course!
On the forward screen, the fractured sensor systems coughed up a view of the oncoming vessel. And it was no Klingon ship. It was a moving mountain, triple or more the size of Kozara's ship. Bush glanced at the captain. Then they both looked at the forward screen and watched the massive shape freight training down upon them.
Brace for impact.
At the last moment, the big ship suddenly tipped upward on a wing and surged hard off, angling directly over the cutter's topknot and scratching by on the grace of what must have been raw inches. Mopping a cold sweat, Bateson wallowed back into his command chair.
I can't believe they missed us.
Mike Dennis reported.
They decompressed their loading bay. At the last second, they blew their whole bay.
Bush stared upward at the shadowy underside of the unknown giant.
Look at the size of it. Gotta be 700 meters.
Mike, check out his emissions ratios. John, analyze the structural materials. Is that Starfleet design? At least in rudiments. Looks like it's been puffed up and stretched out.
Sir, the emissions ratios check out as a Starfleet standard matter-antimatter enrichment, with some modifications I don't recognize.
Wolf added.
I'm detecting some new materials, reading some composites the computer doesn't recognize.
Wiz Dayton pivoted in his chair on the upper deck.
Captain, they're hailing us.
Bateson settled into his command chair.
Answer it.
Wiz worked his board, and through the clearing haze on the bridge, the main screen shifted from a view of that big ship to a view of a huge, wide, bright room of some kind, with lots of lounge chairs and people sitting in most of the chairs. In the middle of the room were three chairs and three people, one a woman. Humans, at least. Bateson drew a slow breath.
This is Captain Morgan Bateson of the USS Bozeman. Can we render assistance?
The screen now centered on a rather stately, bald gentleman.
Captain Jean-Luc Picard of the Federation Starship Enterprise. We were just going to ask you the same thing. Have you any idea what just happened?
Our sensors detected a temporal distortion, then your ship appeared. We nearly hit you.
The Enterprise has been caught in a temporal causality loop, and I suspect something similar happened to you. Captain Bateson, perhaps you should beam aboard our ship. There's something we need to discuss.
The year 2368. Bridge of the USS Enterprise. NCC 1701D.
Commander William Riker motioned to the ready room door.
This way, Captain Bateson. Right through here, sir.
Morgan Bateson hesitated, gazing at the huge vision of his own ship on the gigantic forward screen. Riker couldn't help a few seconds of awe as he gazed at the Bozeman II. Something about old ships. There was visible damage on the cutter's hull, and that caught both men's eyes for a few lingering seconds. Then Bateson turned and came through the ready room door at Riker's side. Jean-Luc Picard was pacing in front of his desk. Picard wasn't a large man, but he commanded a certain attention. He was less swashbuckler than magistrate, an O-line sovereign of a synthetic kingdom. He approached the cutter captain.
Welcome aboard, Captain Bateson.
Bateson shook Picard's hand.
Captain Picard, this is a Starfleet ship, isn't it?
Yes, yes, it is, most certainly.
Bateson took one more glance out the wide viewports that graced the ready room. Then he turned.
Will you please identify yourselves and your vessel now?
I am, as I told you, Captain Jean-Luc Picard. This vessel is the United Federation of Planets flagship USS Enterprise.
Bateson looked at Picard, then at Riker, then back to the captain.
The Enterprise, Constitution Class NCC 1701, is under command of Captain Spock, currently flagged for Admiral James Kirk. We just rendezvoused with the Enterprise less than 1 hour ago, and this ship is not that ship.
No, this isn't that ship. But this is, in fact, the Enterprise, Galaxy Class. Our number is NCC 1701-D.
Bateson looked at Picard with slightly narrowed gray eyes.
Get to the bottom line, Captain. What do you think is going on?
Our ships are roughly 90 years apart in development. The causality loop has put us together. We are from the year 2368.
Bateson remained very still for a long moment, then fanned his hands casually.
Well, Captain Picard, Mr. Riker, if all this checks out, I'll do everything possible, as I'm sure Starfleet will, to make you and your crew comfortable in our time. Perhaps there's some way to use this causality to return you to your own time.
There isn't. We've been checking that more than anything else. The causality has a particular temporal flow that can't be reversed by artificial means. In fact, it's gone now. We think it's subject to its own forces, and it's gone to another era, possibly another epoch. We can't find it anymore.
While Picard talked, he threw a desperate glance at Riker. Are we sure it's not us? A chill ran up Riker's arms. He fingered the controls of the computer access tie-in. Local celestial qualities, position, status. Home in on the beacon of the Linden Navigational Outpost, established only 14 years ago. Please be there. Yes, loud and clear. He tilted his head, caught Picard's eye beyond Bateson's shoulder, then pointed quickly at Bateson. It's him. Picard sighed.
Captain Bateson, I'm deeply sorry, but we've confirmed this. The causality was apparently a forward time current.
Bateson slowly drifted to the couch. He sat and his head and shoulders slumped until he was staring at his own feet. His voice trailed out on the rag of a sigh.
Oh, no.
Riker knew that the tragedy for Bateson's crew, going forward in time, was far worse than to go backward. Anyone finding himself in the past could at least contrive to send a message forward, let relatives know what had happened. People who went backward in time had a chance to fit in. But to go forward in time was something else. No way to tell families what happened. Men from the past, in a ship that was already old 90 years ago, were instantly out of date, their hard-won skills obsolete. They were oddities. Riker watched sadly as all this ran through Morgan Bateson's mind. Bateson's face was like plaster, his eyes shallow and pained.
Well, all right, tell me. Did we at least matter?
Picard turned to his officer.
Go ahead, number one. Tell him. On Rhodes Colony, where Starbase 12 is still intact and operating, the main spaceway is called Bateson Boulevard. By standing down Kozara, you saved over 50,000 people, a full-sized starbase, several colonies, and the security of two sectors. The incident was investigated for months. The search and rescue alone went on for weeks. They couldn't find a trace, of course. Kozara was chased out of Federation space by Admiral Kirk and Captain Spock and the Enterprise, who responded to your convoy. The Klingon plot was exposed and condemned as cowardly espionage rather than noble challenge, which embarrassed the entire Klingon Empire and shook the High Council to its bones. Kozara was saved from execution by his one nominal victory, destruction of the cutter Bozeman, and the best border captain the Federation ever had.
best boarder, Captain. Best enough to get good and lost. Aren't there any ways we can go back in time?
There are ways. None very dependable or accurate. You may overshoot your own time by decades in the other direction. Captain Bateson, please be assured, we'll do whatever we can to help you and anyone in your crew. What would you like?
I'd like your first officer to brief my crew and show them the records. I'd also appreciate your help with any of my crew who want to contact their relations or find out what happened to their families. And I'd very much like my ship to remain commissioned as long as possible. She's our only anchor now. I'll make that recommendation and throw my influence behind it. Also, I'll make the ship's counselor available to assist your crew through the emotional transitions.
I'm sorry, your ship's what?
Deanna Troy, ship's counselor.
My crew won't need any counselor, Captain. No offense, but we've got each other.
None taken. Smaller vessels run on a different dynamic than a full-sized cruiser.
Perhaps in this century they do.
Riker bristled at the tone, then clamped his lips shut. He realized that Bateson wasn't trying to insult them. He'd just run headlong into a glaring difference between his time and this. Picard gave a small smile.
Well, there's one little quirk in your favor. Your seniority. Your commission date still stands, making you, in fact, the most senior captain currently on duty. You may be able to parlay that into great influence, Captain. And on behalf of all you have sacrificed in the line of duty, I will defend that seniority.
Morgan Bateson pushed off the couch, stood up, then shuffled to the huge viewing ports. He gazed out at open space.
We have no mission. Our ship is outdated. Gentlemen, my crew doesn't need counseling. They need a purpose. They need a reason to focus their minds forward. It's my new mission in life to provide them with one. Something tells me you'll find your way, Captain. And we will unceasingly defend you.
Riker smiled.
Yes, we will. That's a promise.
The year 2371. Federation Starbase 12.
Between commands. That queasy insecurity. No ship, no home port, no mission. Commander Will Riker couldn't get rid of the feeling. Shore leave was good when a docked ship lay waiting to go out again. But where there was no ship, as he hurried along the promenade at Starbase 12, Riker was anxious to meet Captain Picard. Command of the Enterprise D had been Jean-Luc Picard's crowning achievement. Now the ship was wrecked beyond all salvage, destroyed in the line of duty, crashed to a planet's surface to save the lives of her crew. At first, the crew had felt victorious at simply having survived, then relieved, and now deeply disturbed by twin burdens. Living in the uneasy vacuum between assignments and dealing with the heavy weight of having failed to bring their ship home. Losing the ship seemed to be getting worse with time. Riker entered the command officer's lounge. Jean-Luc Picard stood at the wide windows of the viewing portico, watching the movements of ships and workers in the protected work cavity of Starbase 12. He didn't turn at Riker's greeting.
Good morning, Captain. How are you today? Well enough. Same as yesterday, and the day before, and the weekend. I'll get you some tea, sir, just the way you like it.
Riker turned to the replicator.
Tea, Earl Grey, hot.
Picard accepted the steaming cup of tea from the receiver port.
I never order anything else, do I? Every time, it's tea, Earl Grey, hot. Perhaps next time, I'll be wild and ask for hot grey tea, Earl. The poor computer will have a stroke.
Riker felt as if he were picking his way through a minefield.
Sir, it's been 5 months now. You've approved every reassignment request from the general crew, but haven't you noticed that none of those requests have come from your command staff? Most of us are holding off on reassignment. We're assuming... Don't say it. I know what you're all assuming. Before Riker could respond, an announcement came on over the Starbase comm.
Attention all Starbase personnel, residents, and visitors. There will be a special encore showing of A Night to Remember at 1800 hours tonight. The touring exhibit of artifacts from the Titanic are currently on display on decks 4, 5, and 9 of the USS Bozeman. Thank you, and welcome aboard.
Leave it to us to have a temporary billet at a starbase hosting artifacts from ships in various conditions of wreck.
Maybe they should just put us on display.
Will, you're taking this far too personally. Captain, I came down here to cheer you up.
I don't need cheering up.